You're listening to The Sports Rabbi, hosted by Josh Halichman.
All right, we're back with the Sports Rabbi, Josh Halichman. Welcome aboard to the Sports Rabbi Show, Holy Land Hoops. We're bringing the best of Israeli basketball all the way up north to Nahariya, down south to Eilat, and all the great cities in between, Tel Aviv, Jerusalem, and many, many more. If you like this podcast, make sure you subscribe to us, leave us a five-star rating, write us a nice review, Spotify, Google Podcasts, iTunes, wherever you listen to your podcast. Check us out at the Sports Rabbi, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, sportsrabbi.com for the latest and greatest news, both in English and in Hebrew. We deliver it to you in both languages. We are the only website in Israel that does so. And as we approach the Maccabi Tel Aviv Panathinaikos quarterfinal series, it tips off on Tuesday evening at Oaka Arena. We thought, let's go back to some of the great players that Maccabi Tel Aviv had in the past that also played against Panathinaikos and experienced a five-game series as well as a final in the Final Four. And I thought, hey, somebody that was familiar with Final Fours, definitely recently with Alabama, none other than Richard Hendricks. How are you doing today, Richard? How are you?
Doing great. Thank you so much for having me.
This is an honor and a pleasure, first of all, to have you on board here with the Sports Rabbi. But we got to start off the conversation before Maccabi Tel Aviv with a little Alabama action. SEC, of course, you work for the SEC Network. You're an analyst over there, ESPN. Alabama men's basketball program. They had a great run this year, didn't they?
Yeah, they've had a really good season, and also it's not just the run for this year, but it's under the leadership of head coach Nate Oates and what they've done in recent years, you know, last year being the number one team in the country in the NCAA tournament, and then backing up that season after winning the SEC to come along and win and get to the Final Four, the first Final Four in school history, and getting the team over the hump. Many really good teams that Alabama has had in its past, but to finally get to be a participant in the Final Four with a chance to win a national championship, couldn't be more thrilled as an alum.
You know, I know Levi Randolph here, of course, plays for Hapoel Jerusalem. He was thrilled beyond belief. I got to see him a few nights before the big game. So, you know, the Alabama Crimson Tide reps are still here in Israel, Richard, so you should feel proud about that. And he's also the captain of the Reds, Hapoel Jerusalem, if you didn't know that.
Oh, I know. I keep in contact with Levi often. You know, I'm so proud of him. He's a little bit younger than I am, but we're from the same area in North Alabama. Mm-hmm. He's from about 15, 20 miles away from where I'm from. So I've known him ever since he was in high school. And then when he went on to go to the University of Alabama, he had an outstanding career, one of the better players in the program's history. And, you know, started off his professional career and bounced around a little bit, tried a little bit in the NBA, because I definitely think that he's an NBA caliber player. But I've been pleased to see that he is fine to make a decision to cut over to Europe. And he found himself with a high quality club in Hapoel Jerusalem. And you can see what his skill set and ability and leadership is able to do. And I'm glad that he's having a good run in Israel.
You know, when I saw, you know, pictures of you, you still look like you could put the basketball in the hoop, and you're still a young guy, 37 years old. You know, we remember you, you know, over a decade ago, and it seems like you were, you know, such a veteran basketball player then, but you were really at the start of your career when you started with Maccabi Tel Aviv back in 2010. Of course, you played with Alabama 2005-2008. You were selected by the Golden State Warriors with the 49th overall pick in the 2008 draft. Never made it to the NBA, played in the G League, went to Granada for a season, then come to Maccabi Tel Aviv. How did that work out that you decided to, you know, come to Israel, Maccabi Tel Aviv? If you remember back, what convinced you that the Holy Land was the place for you and that would give you the best opportunity to, you know, to continue on in your career and grow?
Well, to take it back after being drafted in 2008, you know, it's one thing. I was on Golden State. People don't realize I actually made the team and signed a multi-year contract with the team, but there were some situations as far as rosters and players allocation and whatnot that made a difference that they had to release me mid-season. And I was on the team, made the roster, but never got a chance to get in a game. I sat there inactively on the bench. So it's always viewed that I never had the NBA career, but I did make the team.
I won't take that away from you then.
And not only that, in my first preseason action that I ever had against the Oklahoma City Thunder, I had 13 rebounds and 12 points in about 20 minutes of action. So for me, I always look at it like, you know, it's something that I wish that I could say that I did have a longer NBA career, but I was always, convinced that I could play at that level. But moving forward,
before we move on, I have a trivia question for you. Who was the next player the Golden State Warriors drafted in an NBA draft?
Oh, Steph Curry.
There you go.
Listen, that's my claim to fame. I mean, listen, I guess I can say that's my claim to fame that they got it right after picking me in 2000. Got a generational talent come through after. But, you know, it's an interesting thing because, so many people don't know those type of trivia facts, but I realized that a long time ago. And not only that, who was the next person to wear number 35 at Golden State after me?
Was it KD?
Yeah, it was Kevin Durant. So, wow. You know, if you really look at it, the number 35 Richard Hendricks jersey in Golden State and the next draft pick being Steph Curry, you got two guys who have been Hall of Fame caliber players. And you only look at myself. What could have been? What could have been?
Did KD call you for your permission? That's the
he should have called me for permission for the number 35. And who knows? I could have been the guy setting screens and passing passes to Steph Curry and still been out there winning four championships. So you never know how the ball bounces in your professional career. It was an experience for me. I definitely thought that I should have been on that team longer and had a much longer career, but you know, that's not how the ball bounces sometimes, and you have to be grateful for the highs and the lows of your career because it kind of makes who you are in your life. Now answering your question, after playing in the D-League for the rest of that year, I led the D-League in rebounds and I believe in double-doubles. I was a D-League All-Star. It was 2008. There was a recession, and a lot of teams were not making any call-ups from the D-League at that particular time. We only had maybe a handful of guys to get called up to the NBA in that season because every owner wanted to save as much money as they possibly can. They did not want to make the investment. So after that season, I was still under contract with the Warriors. And I was fine in a situation with them as far as being on the payroll. I made a decision that I was going to go to Europe and try to get back to the NBA by way of Europe. And what took place was, since I didn't get the call up, I said, I'll try to do it. And I had an opportunity. I played summer league. Spanish team called me up and offered me and ended up signing with CB Granada. On that Granada team, this was a team that had not had a whole lot of history in the league, but we come together and it was me and Joe Ingles, who eventually played for Maccabi. Jimmy Snap Hunter was the veteran on that team. Jan Stephenson is another name, Pablo Aguilar, Teemu Ronikoo. I mean, I could name the whole team, but we had a young team that ended up finishing in contention for the ACB playoffs and finished around tied for 9th or 10th place in the league. And this was a tremendous achievement for that club, the highest finish that club ever had. So after that season took place, I really had my sights on going back to the NBA and trying to fulfill my NBA dreams. But Maccabi Tel Aviv called, and I did not have any type of, you know, knowledge of the club. I'd heard it from years after being a basketball fan and watching a few preseason games and exhibition games that Maccabi Tel Aviv had played against some NBA teams. So I had heard of the name, but I did not know the significance of the organization, the history of the organization. I did not know their current standing in the EuroLeague. And more than anything, I did not know anything about David Blatt. But it was the best offer that I had, a strong offer, and they offered me a 2-year deal, and I was going to have an opportunity at 23 years old to play in the EuroLeague, and I was excited about it, and they gave me an NBA out. Now, if I knew what I knew then, you know, I always thought, oh, I'm going to sign this, and I'm going to go play in the NBA, but obviously, I don't think that was in the cards. I had an NBA out in the deal, but when I arrived to Israel in 2010, I could immediately realize that this was a high-level club and a special place that really enjoyed basketball. And to be 23 years old, to be on that stage, you know, starting in the EuroLeague for the first game, was something that was really big for my career.
No, without a question. That first season, you end up going all the way to the finals. I remember it very clearly, as if it was yesterday. I remember watching it. It was the night of Remembrance Day, Memorial Day here in Israel, and the game had to start pretty early. I believe it started maybe 5:30 in the evening, and it had to finish before the TVs were going to be turned off at around 7:30. And I remember sitting there, and we all kind of knew you had a great team. That season was very special. You had some great players, great veterans. It was David Blue, Derek Sharp near the end of his career. Lior Eliyahu comes back. Guy Panini, of course, now an assistant coach with Maccabi. Tal Boorstin, Chuck Eadson, Sofo, Pargo. Listen, if Daron Perkins doesn't get hurt during the, you know, during the playoffs, you got to figure you guys are winning the championship.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, that really is what it boils down. You mentioned that team. That team. And really, both of the 2 years that I was in Tel Aviv the first time that I was there were really special teams that Coach Blatt and his organization and the staff all put together. But that first year, I mean, if people can remember, we started off a little bit slow trying to figure things out. We lost to Baskonia on the road. And then once we kind of settled down, we end up winning the next nine games in a row in the group phase. We move on to the top 16. And we were pummeling teams. I'm talking about we beat Rome, I believe, one time by almost 40 or 50 points. We beat Ljubljana by about 40 or 50 points.
Oh, I remember those games well.
Where we were just absolutely running teams. And, you know, and on that team, we went 12 deep. And we had a lot of newcomers on the team, really, because guys were coming back. I remember Tal Boorstin playing in Fuenlabrada the year before when I was in Spain, and he came back. And Lior was in Spain as well, and Cajal Abraal, he came back. Myself being a newcomer, Jeff Foote was on that team, Sofo, Pargo. So we all came in, the newcomers, with this mentality of just a confidence that we could win because we were good players. But I didn't know the magnitude of what it was of playing for Maccabi Tel Aviv in the EuroLeague, the historical respect that organization have, and more than anything, the standard that the organization had for winning and the fan base had for winning. But I came in with the mentality as a guy who's always been a competitor, but had not really been on championship level teams. I'd been on teams that competed for them and were always in the mix. I was always yearning for the opportunity to be on a true title contender in a team that was a front runner, a team that knew, that had high expectations, wanted to win, expected to win. And when I got to be a part of that, that was a special feeling for me, because even though I wasn't the star player on the team, I took so much pride in being and playing my role and contributing as much as I could when I could.
Of course, we're on here with the Sports Rabbi Josh Halifman, very special guest Richard Hendricks. So we preview, of course, the Maccabi Tel Aviv, Panathinaikos series. Of course, Richard Hendricks played against Panathinaikos in the 2011 final, the EuroLeague championship game, and also against Panathinaikos in a five-game series that we'll get to shortly. Talk a little bit about what it was like to play under Coach David Blatt. And obviously, David Blatt is, you know, suffering from, ALS right now. He's around. We get to see him. A wonderful person. Is, you know, obviously Tamir Blatt has developed into a great point guard for Maccabi Tel Aviv. His daughters, one of which I see all the time on the sidelines for Sport 5. But, you know, what was it like working with such a brilliant basketball mind as in David Blatt?
Oh, it was an absolute joy. Coach Blatt and I still have a relationship to this day. We actually touched base a few weeks ago and talked a lot of X's and O's and talked about philosophical things, you know, talked for over an hour talking about basketball, and really not just, we really talked about the current state of basketball and what to do as far as leadership and coaches and putting together a team, not talking a lot, reminiscing on the old days. I mean, so it's an ongoing and a refreshing relationship that I really enjoyed so much. The thing that I enjoyed playing for David Blatt was the fact that it was clear that you had a leader that was confident, well-prepared, knew his material, and also not from a standpoint of X's and O's, was a master in understanding the psychology of running a team. He knew whose buttons to press, when to press them, how to get the most out of everyone, how to motivate his team to be prepared to win. And more than anything, the mentality that we're trying to win every single day. You know, oftentimes when you're playing for a lot of coaches, they're not that type level of detail. They're not that disciplined. And they want the results, but it wasn't about the results. It was about how you did it and the process and the environment in which you had it. And he had so many great things about that that really helped me out. And I enjoyed being a player for him for those 2 years. We won a lot of games. Mm-hmm. I want to say in the Israeli league, we only lost. And for me, I think the couple of games we did lose, I was actually one of the players that they selected to not play. Because you know, you had to dress so many players.
Oh, yes.
You can only dress so many. I remember he told me we lost a game one time. I think it was B'nai HaSharon, my first year. It was the only game we lost. And after we lost, he came and he said, "You're not sitting out again." And so I want to say my whole 2 years and then even the 3 years when I came back for another half a season, right, I only lost maybe two Israeli league games, maybe one or two. So the point I'm saying is like, that's a mentality that he has that we don't expect to drop anything and you prepare for, you respect your opponent. And I learned so many, not just basketball lessons, but life lessons by being on his teams.
You know, Guy Panini was on your team. He's now assistant coach. Do you think he was an assistant coach or, you know, potential head coach or, you know, down the road? Did you ever see that in him, you know, more than a decade
Panini?
Ago?
Panini? No. Man, no way. I mean, listen, I will say this. Guy was my guy. You know, we had lockers that were near each other. He was always the guy in the locker room that was always keeping it fun. A lot of jokes and pranks all the time. Always very, very light. But I can tell you this, the guy that I played with, and the same thing for me, that I played with from 2010 to 2012 was a different person and player when I came back in 2016. It was the same for me. You know, I came in as a 23-year-old person, single, or not married at the time, and then came back, you know, and I had a family. You know, I was married, I had a child. I was older, you know, so the understanding and the mentality that you have at that time in a locker room, as far as just silliness and playfulness and camaraderie, I couldn't have seen him being a coach in 2010 or 11 or 12. But I will say when I came back in 2016, you could see that the focus had changed. Mm-hmm. The mentality he had after being a EuroLeague champion in 2014. And then obviously, as I moved on and observed him from a distance, when I moved on the rest of my career and saw him when he was in Houlon and then coming back to Tel Aviv, you could see that he could be a coach in the making. When you play that much high level basketball, it's only natural that something has rubbed off. And I'm glad to see that where he is now and that he's on the staff, and hopefully he can one day be in the leadership position on some team.
Is there anybody on these two teams that you really are still in touch with, you know, really, really in touch with?
You know, I used to talk to Doron Perkins often mm-hmm. when he was on staff last season. But as far as the current staff, you know, no, I mean, and even, you know, it's been over 12 years. I mean, right.
Like the guys that you played with, like, for example, Derek Sharp, David Blue, Eadson, you know, these guys, not even this, I'm talking about, these guys, you know, Sean James, of course, who just, you know, tragically lost his wife, Devin Smith, any of these guys you speak to on a frequent basis?
Oh, yes. I mean, and unfortunately, as you said, with the tragic situation, we've definitely reconnected, obviously, several of us, in the events in Sean's loss.
Right.
But we had also, Sean and I had also talked on a regular basis, you know, because, you know, we are all in the basketball game. Devin's mm-hmm. coaching, which I talk working to in the media side of things. So I'm on the road of having games where I'm running into Sean, where he's scouting players as he's working. John Shire, you see now he's a head coach at Duke.
We just saw Devin Smith 2 weeks ago at the Wizards game. He was at the Wizards, I think it was the Wizards-Laker game. Wizard-Laker or Wizard-Bucks? I was at both. He was at one of the two of them.
Yeah. So
Blazer,
you know,
Lakers. Yeah.
I'm in contact with him. In contact with Keith Langford, Jeremy Pargo. I see all the time and talk to him on social media from time to time. So I mean, so many of those guys. It's been a while since I've talked to David Blue. A couple of years, but he was doing well. But the good thing about both of those 2 years is that it's like, and I was just telling Keith Langford this yesterday, that every single one of us, when we get back on the phone or you run into each other in the basketball world, it's like it just goes right back to 2012. It just runs right back to 2011. Like, and just you pick up on those great moments that we had, the wins, the championships, the celebrations, because those teams were teams. I mean, not only did we, you know, play hard on the court, we played hard off the court, and we got together as families. We ate all the time. Like, it was just a constant thing. And then my second year, when we were on the road in the Adriatic League, it was like we were totally just together. I mean, all time. So such a pleasant bond that I have a relationship with all of those guys, and will always have that.
You know, let's take a look at the 2012 series now against Panathinaikos. First game, you guys get blown out 93-73. That's at, of course, Oaxaca. Rabid fans, crazy situation over there. You know, Diamantidis is doing what Diamantidis does, with 15 points, Calathes 13, Charis 9, Mike Batiste, David Logan 11 points apiece. Your side, Devin Smith was 17, Keith Langford 21. Going to game two, you escape Greece with a split. You end up winning 94-92. What's the feelings, you know, going into those last few minutes, and all of a sudden David Blue just hits those huge, huge three-pointers?
Well, you know, Dave was always really good in the money time. You know, we had, over the course of the couple of years, you know, we had a big win. I remember at Kimke the year before, where he had a game-winning shot at the buzzer. We had some Israeli League games where Gabe always came through in the clutch. So he was just a guy that was always ready for those moments. But I just remember in the second game, you drop the first one in the fashion that you do. And you're just thinking, and you know that the fan base and the media has this mentality of, Maccabi's about to get swept. And they got beat last year in the final. They can't get over it. And then here we go in game two, and we win the game. We chip away, we come back, we win the game. And, you know, it's just one of those things where now we're going back to Tel Aviv and we have a little bit of life. Mm-hmm. We have a little bit of life. And we just know if we can use the power and from we have an energy from game three and get to game, you know, four for game two and win on game three at home, then we can get this series and get it done. But what I remember so much about that, those games were so pressure packed. When you're playing against a Obradovic team, just like it was in the EuroLeague final the year before for me, which was the worst game I ever had in my life, and struggled tremendously in a reserve role in that game. Everything, every single possession against those Panathinaikos teams were so hard. I mean, you're talking about multiple pick and roll actions with Diamantidis. The next year with Charis, who's there in 2012. The bigs that they have, you're dealing with the experience of Batiste and Fotsis and Jan Bayukis and Alex Marich. You know, they have so many guys who can come in. Costa Kaimakoglu, who had so much size and power and strength down low. And they were always like a machine, just where they needed to be. And it was hard to put that type of team away. So I just remember the amount of focus. I never had to focus that hard in my life, every single possession. I know when people say that, they don't understand that, how that feels. Like for a 40-minute game that, you know, if you're checking in off the bench or if you're starting, that it's like every decision, every move that I make, I got to play mistake-free basketball. Because if you make a mistake, they're going to make you pay. In a game of this magnitude, you know, you're trying to survive in advance.
You end up winning game three. Home crowd, big win, 65-62. Game four, something happens over the last couple of minutes where things just kind of fall apart a bit. If I remember correctly, I think you're up by a point with about 3 minutes left, and then you never quite seem to get it back in. Diamantidis with some free throws, Costas Kemoglou with free throws. He gets a shot also. Do you remember those last 3 minutes of that game four? You know, you're in front of the home crowd. You know you can wrap it up. It's so close, and then it just doesn't happen. It slips through your fingers.
Well, I think for me, I go back and probably remember more so game three, because game three was a really big game for me. Mm-hmm. That was a game where I stepped up in the clutch. I want to say that I was
9.7 rebounds, 3 assists,
7 rebounds, but very efficient. You know, hit my free throws when I needed, had a few blocks to set the tone of the game early on. I want to say I might have came out as a starter and coach changed some things up. And also I had a putback that Keith Langford missed a layup that I put up, offensive rebound putback, that was the game winner in the final seconds of the game. And, you know, so several steals as well and assists. So it was a good game. But like I said, once again, another one of those grind out games that you just have with that team. They won't go away, but you move into game four and all you're thinking is, okay, if I'm not mistaken, the game is not, maybe not the next night. It might've been a day of rest in between. I can't remember if it was back to back or it was a day of rest in between.
It was a day of rest.
But I just remember that I know it's going to be so hard. It's going to be so hard. And the pressure of knowing we have to get this done, because if this goes back to Greece, it's just not going to work out well for us. You know, so we go in game four and we're fighting. Everything's into the game. I just feel like we had a situation in the game where there was a mistake that was made in transition, gave up a three-pointer somewhere. I can't remember where it was. And also a missed wide-open three that we might have had. I can't remember who it was. It might have been Damon Mallett, who's a great player. Had a missed a corner three that really could have given us the lead or something late in the ball game. But they just made
it would have tied. It would have tied up the game.
Would have tied up the game. But I just remember, you know, those missed assignments. And once again, like I'm saying, the focus you had to have on the assignments, the missed assignments that they had, not being where you need to be defensively. And it's just all it takes. And you end up losing that game. But more than anything, the feeling when it was over, you felt like you lost the entire series. And you really knew that it was like, okay, it's over. We lost. But we're going to have to figure out a way to regroup and go on the road to Greece and get this done. Like, you know, so it was a challenging game, but I remember just, man, the atmosphere in Nokia Arena was just electric. I mean, so many people wanted that so badly, and just to not get it done. I mean, even now, just thinking back on it, it's one of the worst defeats that I ever had in my career. Cause it was like, we had an opportunity that we could have overcome this, you know, nemesis that, that we had. In recent years.
I stand corrected on Damon Mallett. He hits a three-pointer to pull you within one. Pulls you within one, 64-63, 5:02 left. Then a little bit later on, it's 67-66. Let me take a look here. I'm pulling it up here. Here it is. Diamantidis hits two free throws. It's 68-67 with 3:01 left. Mallett misses a three. And then Kostas Kamagoglu hits two free throws and then goes forward. We get to game five, and this is like an absolute dogfight. This is, you know, you guys are, it's up, it's down. Panathinaikos has a big lead as the game is, you know, nearing its end. They're up by 9 points, 78-69. Panini hits a big three-pointer. Langford hits a big three-pointer. It's now 81-77, under a minute left in the game. Langford hits two free throws, 81-79. And then there's some substitutions, some missed shots. 83-79, Diamantidis, 18 seconds left. David Blue, free throws. Diamantidis with a couple more free throws. Guy Panini gets fouled for three free throws. You tie it up at 85 apiece with 7 seconds left. Your fifth foul, I believe, comes with about 5 seconds left. Diamantidis hits a free throw, misses the second, and that was the end of the game. What's the last minute like there? What I mean, I remember, you know, I'm reliving it, going through the, you know, the play by play here. But it's like, what is it like being on the floor during this last minute where it's just absolute chaos?
This in this game, you could feel the pressure flip in Oaxaca for the Greek fans. Mm-hmm. you have home court advantage, and it's a game that we're battling and we're kind of behind, and then we, you know, make a surge and make it interesting. If you go back on that game log, if I'm not mistaken, that play-by-play, you mentioned a free throws by Dave Blue. Mm-hmm. One of the best plays that I think that David Blatt has ever drawn up that I was a part of. There's a sideline out of bounds mm-hmm. on the far end of the court for us on the opposite side of our bench, on the opposite side. And all game long, the game plan for Panathinaikos has been to stay glued to David Blue because they mm-hmm. didn't want to give him a three-pointer. And coach has a timeout, and he draws up a play. And the play is for me to be on the elbow and break right. open the ball towards the sideline. There's a screen that David Blue is going to set, and then he's going to receive a screen, and he's supposed to make it look as if he's going to pop out towards the three-point line at the wing area and get a clean look. So Coach Blatt changes the play, and Blue fakes the screen to go out towards the three-point line. The defense top locks and tries to deny him from going towards the three-point line. And coach draws up for Blue to slip and backdoor cut. Mm-hmm. That's when the ball was in my hands. Right. I was a good passer, and I dimed David Blue for a backdoor. Mm-hmm. He gets the backdoor layup, and it's an and one.
Yep.
That play right there, when David Blue hits the free throws, really, really was the game, the moment. Now, I felt like this is going to give us some life to make this thing interesting. Obviously, Panini gets fouled. He gets three free throws to tie the game up. One of the free throws bounces up to the top of the rim of the backboard and comes down. He right. hits all three of them. Mm-hmm. Pressure pack moments. Once again, now we're going everything in our defense. We're not doing our matchup zone. We're playing man-to-man. They go pick and roll, and they're switching. So now I'm in the game. I've been playing a flawless game. I've been, you know, the moment is huge. I don't think I've missed a shot in this game. I played strong defense. We also, if I'm not mistaken, in this game, we've been, had some injury problems in this season. Like, if people don't remember, mm-hmm. Sofo was hobbled during the top 16. Sean had some back problems yep. in this season. So from the top 16 into 2012 season, I was the big that had to kind of get it done. So throughout the top 16 and moving into the playoffs, I kind of had to get it done. They were getting back into shape for this game, but here we go in the final moments of the game. I'm in the game. Now, to go back to the Israeli League game that we had, because there was a break between game four and game five going back, and we played an Israeli League game, a big game. And I don't know if you can remember this game, but we played Hapoel Jerusalem mm-hmm. in Malha. And it's a huge game, and they had a really good team. The game goes into overtime, and they come off of a pick and roll, and it's Ramel Bradley and maybe Brian Randall. I can't remember who the big was. Maybe John, can't remember his name. But he, I might have played for the Knicks. He had a Knicks shirt on, but I forget his name. Big man. Went to Minnesota. It kind of slips my mind. He was a big, strong center. They go middle pick and roll, and we switch it. And I'm guarding Ramel Bradley. At the end of the game, isolation top of the key. He tries to cross me over left to right cross, and I pick his pocket, steal the ball. I steal the ball. The ball kind of matriculates over to Tal Burstein. He dunks the ball like at the end of the game, and it's the nail in the coffin. We win this tough game against Jerusalem. Jerusalem was trying to catch us sleeping while we were focused on this playoff run, and they had a really good team, and we were able to win that game. Now, fast forward back to game five, end of the game situation. I've been playing good defense all night long, which is a challenge for me, being a five-man, switching off on really good guards. I'm trying to remain disciplined. I'm coming into my defensive prime at that time in my career. I'm being a better defender and starting to believe in my abilities. So now it's 10 seconds on the clock. They go middle pick and roll. We switch. It's me on Diamantidis. Obviously, this is a guy, a EuroLeague legend. He killed us last year in the final. I'm down in a stance. I'm locked up. He's dribbling the ball. I'm sizing up the dribbles. He gets ready to make his move. He crosses over. In my mind, I'm going right back to what I did week prior in the Jerusalem game against Ramel Bradley. I reach. I don't have my discipline. I reach in for it. The veteran move that he has, he figures a way to get his off arm in there and explode, showed the foul that I was able to reach contact with. And immediately I knew it was my fifth foul, and I knew that I had messed up and that he was going to go to the line with an opportunity to shoot two free throws and win the game. But in my mind, I'm thinking, make a play. I want to make a play. I'm trying to get a stop. And I saw him expose the ball right in front of me. I had long arms and really good anticipation, and I thought I could get the steal. And I reached, and he drew the foul on me, as the veteran did, and he goes to the line. Now, what I also remember is after I come out of the game, and I'm just feeling so down on myself, and I can't believe I've let the team down, he makes the first free throw.
Right.
But he misses the second one.
Mm-hmm.
And on the second free throw, he misses, and it comes off long. And Tal Borstein gets the rebound, if I'm not mistaken. And he's not on the block. He's on the second, on the third spot on the free throw line. So he's near the free. So he gets a long rebound. And when he gets it, all I can see is Yogev Ohayon streaking down the court. And it's like 3 seconds to go. And Tal is trying to pass the ball ahead to Yogev. And Diamantidis and whoever just fouls him all across the arm. And then we're in the bonus. And the refs just ate their whistle. I'm not trying to say that the referees should have called that, but to me, I'm looking at that. That was a clear foul. And I was wishing that it would have been called, because it would have bailed me out after I was the guy that messed up the team in the last possession after playing so well, not having my defensive discipline. But I just remember that. And he missed a free throw, and I'm thinking, oh, man, we had a streak ahead. He could have got fouled. But so many things in that game. Now I'm talking, I have to bring it back. Go back to that game also. There's a moment, the game within the last 30 seconds or minute of the game, maybe in the last 30 seconds, Keith Lankford has the ball and we're down by one. And coach is screaming, hold the ball up. We get a rebound, and Keith, being the attacking scorer that he is, he's so talented. He pushes the ball up the right side of the court. He has a little bit of a seam, and he tries to take it all the way to the basket to take the lead. And they don't call the foul. They eat the whistle. But coach is screaming because he knows we're down one, and if we can draw something up, we can probably scheme something up and win the game. So if you go back to that game, it's so many things that's going on in that one. We have the out-of-bounds play that – coach calls up for David Blue. You have Keith, who puts on the gas and runs through the stoplight and tries to score to take the lead. You have Panini hitting three free throws to tie the game up, to give us an opportunity. You have me at the end of the game not maintaining my defensive discipline and draws a foul. But there's one more thing, and we talk about two is today. I don't even know if I told David Blatt this, but all of my teammates talk about it because it's such a funny thing. You know, if you remember, in between that series, we were also in the Israeli League playoffs, and we played the first game or two against the 8 seed, Habika. And when we played them in this game, we're beating them by 20, 30 points. I don't know, beating them bad. Bad call by the official being made. I had some words. And I'm normally a mild-mannered guy. I don't do anything. I had some words or did something. I think I actually might have taken the ball. And when he called the play, I rolled the ball in the direction of the official. And he took obsession. He took offense and called me for a technical foul. So in Coach Blatt, typical way, always finding a way to motivate the team and to get a point across. And I was always that guy on the team because I could take it. He knew I could take it. He knew the teammates, everybody on the team liked me. And, you know, I was going to work hard and didn't worry about it. Didn't take it personally. He takes me out of the game. He rips me. And then the entire post-game speech after winning the game by 20 points was all about me, not keeping my composure, getting a technical foul. This technical foul is going to cost us if you do this, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So we get fast forward a couple weeks later. We're playing Panathinaikos in game five. We lose the game by 1 point. And I don't know if people can remember, but at one point in the game, Coach Black got a technical foul. And they shot two free throws. And all I'm sitting there thinking, I remember it might have been Keith telling me, like, man, if Coach got that technical foul, he just got all over you. You had to pay a fine. I had to buy everybody lunch. And he was like, he got all over you. He said them two free throws for that technical foul that he got was the difference in us going to the Final Four. And all we could do is laugh about it because, you know, obviously that technical foul might not have been true, but you mathematically, you look at it, you say, man, you're right. Like, you know, I ought to tell Coach he ought to have to buy us lunch after that because he fined me. And it, you know, so many things in that series, man. I mean, it was just a great moment. I'm telling you, it seemed as if even though we didn't go to the Final Four, that felt like the championship. That felt like a championship series. And that's what it's all about. And, you know, I'll never forget it. Even though we were on the losing side, it was a great moment.
Unbelievable stuff. You know, listen, Richard Hendricks, you know, leave Maccabi Tel Aviv after the 2012 season. You're in Milan, Kuban, Unicaja, come back to Maccabi, Gran Canaria, Galatasaray, Le Mans. I believe you're in Japan as well near the end. And now you're, you know, you're back in the game, back in the United States, SEC Network. It's an incredible career. It's an incredible career. I mean, if you look at the package that you've had over the last 20 years, what would be the highlight if you had to pick out one moment of your playing career?
Well, I mean, it's so many. I mean, it's so many. And like you said, I mean, I had a phenomenal career. I'm so grateful for every opportunity that I was given by each coach and organization, the teammates that I played with, the countries that I lived in that taught me so many life lessons, made me so much better as a person. So the overall experience of playing abroad and even my NBA, you know, journey was something that was so special. I would have to say anytime you win a championship, that has to be at the top. And people may remember you look back into 2012, but I'm going to tell you something else too. During that Panathinaikos series, I was in contract negotiations with an extension with Maccabi. I don't know if people can remember that. It's been over 12 years ago. And a lot of things were written in the paper a lot. It was highly publicized because we kind of had thought we had an agreement in principle to continue me for three more years with the team. And something happened in the midst of that playoff series in the negotiation process that the deal fell apart. And it was hard for me because I really wanted to be there. But, you know, you get involved and everybody gets involved in the situation. And, you know, you don't sign the deal because you don't feel like the deal is a fair deal. And I ended up going to Milan. And the situation in Milan, albeit a strong, you know, career move, wasn't a good fit for me as a player. And there were a lot of lessons that I learned in those 5 to 6 months in Milan. A humbling experience too, because you come from the highs of being in Tel Aviv and you're in a country that's so basketball crazy and everyone loves you. And particularly the efforts and the style of play that I had for those teams, I felt so appreciated that I really wanted to be here, and it was hard to leave. But you feel that appreciation. And as a player, you start to believe that you yourself are the driver of all of it. You start to believe a little bit like I'm the guy, I'm the reason, I'm playing a role in this. And you don't realize that it's the collection of everything, the team, the country, your teammates, the coaching staff, the organization, the fan base, all of that stuff comes into play and why the team is successful. It's not just one individual. And I learned quickly when I went to Milan that that was the case, because you don't have that type of culture and soul that we previously had at Tel Aviv. Fortunately for me, after struggles in Milan, I was saved by being on assignment and loan to Lokomotiv Kuban. And I joined that in January of 2013. And I was the missing piece that that team needed. And for the last so many months of the year, I was so focused on trying to resurrect my career to the level that it just was months prior in Tel Aviv that I was laser focused on my professionalism. And we got an opportunity as we put some strings of wins together to go all the way to the Euro Cup championship game.
Right.
And all of the experiences that I had gained from playing in the EuroLeague Final Four with Maccabi in a championship game and having the worst game of my career in 2011 to losing in 2012 and making the mistake against, you know, Diamantidis on the switch on the defensive end in 2012. Now I had so much experience and wisdom in big moments that in 2013, I was focused to win this championship game. And we go out there and we're playing against the Spanish team, Bilbao, in the Euro Cup final. And I'm the Euro Cup finals MVP in 2013. Pretty much play a flawless game. I mean, I don't miss too many shots. I'm unbelievable on the defensive end. I'm passing the ball extremely well. Highlight plays. I mean, rebounding. I had a double-double in the game, I believe, or close to it. And pretty much had it by the third quarter. So to be the MVP and to win a European championship, you know, to me, that was the pinnacle of my career. But it wasn't just because of Loco, which Locomotive Cuban had a lot of it. It was because of all of the past experiences that I'd had in championship moments that I was able to bring that all together to get me and that team to the top. And I was able to shine my biggest on the biggest stage. So that, to me, has to be the best basketball moment that I ever had to win the Euro Cup MVP, Finals MVP, and win a championship and be so big in the big moment for my team. It was a something that I brought from my previous experiences of not showing up in the big moments. So that was a lesson that I learned about preparation and seizing the moment that I'll carry with me for the rest of my life.
That's incredible. It must be so satisfying to be able to take those experiences that you did have at Maccabi and to be able to convert that into what it was the following season with Cuban. And that I think is so special. And I think that's why you're, pretty special person yourself. And I know that you were missed here in Israel. A lot of people obviously wanted to see you continue on, but sometimes things don't work out, and it worked out very well for you. It's kind of funny how, as you said earlier in this podcast, how the ball bounces. You never quite know where it's going to go. You get to Milan and things are just upside down, and then you find the place and you find your moment, and you end up spending another couple seasons there, which is also great. You have a message for the fans that are going to be listening to this. Obviously, a lot of Maccabi Tel Aviv fans are going to be into the series coming up against Panathinaikos, are going to be thinking back to some of those great moments. What do you want to say to those fans?
Well, I would love to say to those fans is this is a historical series. This is a series that has had great coaches, obviously great teams with great historical tradition as a club, and great players who have made great plays for many, many years in the biggest moments. And the most important thing for the fans, particularly as they move forward and play these games, is that they have to be great. They have to feel that they are going to bring that same culture and soul that they have had in previous moments when the Panathinaikos series and games have taken place, like in maybe in 2000 when you went in the Euro League, or 2002 or whatnot, or some of the other days, if I'm even off with my years, in which they've run into Panathinaikos in the EuroLeague playoffs and in the finals. But try to bring something from that to elevate the Maccabi, you know, nation, to try to help propel this team to get over the hump and get a win against a historic rival. It means so much to everyone. And I was thrilled that I had an opportunity to be a part of it in my playing days.
Richard Hendricks, an honor and a pleasure to have you on board here with the Sports Rabbi. If people want to follow Richard, you can check him out on Twitter at RHENDRIX35. And you can get a full dose of Alabama basketball and SEC and ESPN and a lot of great stuff over there. Richard Hendricks, an honor and a pleasure. This was a thrill for me. Thank you so much for coming on board. And hopefully we'll reach out and speak at some point in the near future as well. It'd be an honor and a pleasure to do that again with you.
I hope so. It was a pleasure for me as well. I appreciate you for allowing me to go down memory lane because, you know, I played for so many teams and been around so much basketball that I'd almost forgotten a lot of those great moments from those great times from my time in Israel. So I appreciate you and good luck to all of the fans who are supporting Maccabi and good luck to the team and the organization. And, you know, I'll be pulling for them from afar.